Movie Mavericks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Movie Mavericks, speaking of fucking long, uncut European cocks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Now for your hosts, Jason and Trevor.
I can't wait.
Hey now, everybody, welcome to episode 318 of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. I'm Trevor Anderson, sitting over to Jason Rugard. He has a rundown for us.
All right, on tonight's show, we'll be playing our game This or That, the movie versus game. A little bit of trivia for you and reviews for Beauty and the Beast, Hardcore Henry, Underworld Blood Wars, and Resident Evil amongst those titles. Also, trailers for Justice League, All Eyes on Me, the Tupac film, Baywatch, Goon 2, and Rough Night. That's the Scarlett Johansson, Kate McKenna film. We'll be talking about all that tonight, so stay with us. We got a packed show. But first, let's get to the trivia. I thought this was a good piece of trivia here. I didn't know this one. Pisser? See if you got this one. Yeah, it was a good PC trivia. It's actually a Will Smith trivia question here. You know me. I love Will
Smith. Big Will Smith, Big Willie style.
Yeah. Well, I consider myself the White Will Smith, so we'll just go with that. And
you don't have the ears, sir.
In fact, I'm the only one that considers myself the White Will Smith. But you're right. But I do have the ears. Let's talk about this. Which 2008 thriller was originally slated to star Will Smith, but was eventually headlined by Samuel L. Jackson, but was eventually produced by Will Smith?
I don't.
You don't know?
Well, I know a movie that I could say, and it was actually a movie I was going to bring up to you and ask you if you remembered this movie and whatever happened to this, because no one ever talks about this movie anymore. And I can't exactly remember, but it was that, the Lakeview Terrace movie.
It is, yes.
Is that what
yes.
it is?
Yeah, yeah. Very good.
I don't think I could have imagined Will Smith being in that, but he produced it.
He stayed on as a producer. He was going to play the Samuel Jackson role, obviously, there. And it was also slated to star Ashton Kutcher at one point in the role that Patrick Wilson played. Kerry Washington is also in this. I've actually never seen
that. Would have been
movie.
Terrible. Oh, you never saw it. It's really saw it. Pretty good.
Yeah, it's a Neil LaBute film. It's directed by
Neil LaBute. And I was thinking about this the other day. It like popped into my head, and I was going to bring it up on the last episode, and I forgot. So it's weird that you would put this as a trivia question now, but it's a movie that came and went and it had like a little bit of acclaim at the time, but there's so many small movies like this.
I love these kind of movies. I've been kind of on a run of watching these crazed boyfriend slash lover, jilted whoever, you know, type movies. I watched Fear, the Marky Mark, Reese Witherspoon movie, which still holds up very well 20 years later. I watched Unlawful Entry with Ray Liotta and Kurt Russell recently, which reminded me to go back and check out Lakeview Terrace because I own it and I've never seen it. So I have it sitting here, and this is what prompted the goddamn tribute.
Check it out. I mean, Wilson's like scary in it.
Wilson is?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought that it was going to be the Samuel Jackson character from... I thought it was really kind of an Unlawful Entry remake, but I guess it's a little bit more racially charged than that.
It is. Okay. I mean, I guess. I haven't seen it in a while, but I do remember really liking it. And it was, I guess, it's freaky. I don't know. I guess everyone's kind of, everyone tries to be a man kind of in it, you know, but not so much. Well, Wilson's a little more standoffish, I guess, for obvious reasons.
Yeah, I want to see it now. So,
but I would still check it out. I do remember a lot of things like the cameras and all the shit that he does. It's fucking annoying and just pushing people. You know, it's standard thriller, right? Any standard the neighbor's crazy thriller, right?
I love that, these kind of movies, because they do get under your skin, because we can all relate to them. We've all had an annoying neighbor or, you know, a problem with somebody that won't go away. And you can... It's just these kind of movies are, when they're done well, are guilty pleasures for me always. And we talked about that Katherine Heigl one that's coming out, the trailer for that last episode. And these are always kind of steady grocers. This one, though, had Lakeview Terrace had a critical acclaim, though, that most didn't. So, yeah, I want to check it out. All right, are you ready for This or That, the game?
Sure.
Are you ready to put on your thinking cap? All right.
My thinking cap.
So we got 10 movies, five standoffs. And you tell me off the cuff reactions here of your favorite of the two.
Hit
Are you
me.
Ready, sir?
Hit
All
me.
Right. Walk the Line or Ray?
Walk the Line.
Usual Suspects or Way of the Gun?
Usual Suspects.
Gross Point Blank or High Fidelity?
High Fidelity.
Meet the Parents or Analyze This?
Meet the Parents.
16 Blocks or Red?
I'm going to say Red.
All right. Did well. Your reflex timing is way up, sir.
Those are, well, yeah, the second one was kind of a difficult one.
Yeah, otherwise you were pretty quick off the cuff on that. I give you credit. Let's talk Walk the Line or Ray. I've never seen either. I refuse to.
No, I did not like Ray at all. I will say I hated it, but Walk the Line I liked quite a bit. So that's an easy choice between the two, but I didn't think either of them were amazing.
These came out back-to-back in successive years, 2004 and 5. They both were critically acclaimed Oscar darlings, and everybody says I got to see both of them. And I've seen snippets of both of them, and they seem very, very similar. They follow that music biopic template, and I'm just not interested. I never have, but I got to give these both a shot, though, at some point. I own them both. How strange is that? They sit on that DVD shelf unwatched. I can see them literally right now. Yeah, of course they do, right? All right, Usual Suspects, Way of the Gun, both written by Christopher McQuarrie.
This one I thought was hard. I chose Usual Suspects, so I could just easily have gone Way of the Gun. I mean, for story and writing and stuff, I would say Usual Suspects, but for directing and like actions and blocking, you know, anything like that, I would say Way of the Gun. So that was a hard one for me because I really, really love the direction of Way of the Gun.
Yeah, I would agree with you, your pick and the reason why. Usual Suspects has that ending that will never be topped and some great, great sequences. But it has some dull spots too, let's be honest. I watched it recently and it is slow. Way of the Gun is also slow, but it's slow in the kind of way that Sergio Leone or Peckinpah would have been. In that opening sequence where he punches Sarah.
Beautifully shot than I think Usual Suspects is, really.
And gritty. It really is a gritty film. I mean, it's grim. All right, next we have Gross Point Blank or High Fidelity, the two John Cusack flicks.
Two great John Cusack
flicks.
Honestly,
classics, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, High Fidelity is one of my all-time favorite movies, so it wins easily for me over Gross Point Blank, but I still love Gross Point Blank as well.
Gross Point Blank is, I think, the best movie ever done about a high school reunion. I think I love the way that this movie's handled, especially how quirky it is. And I think even though it loses to High Fidelity, because I will say High Fidelity is my pick over the two, it's still an excellent film and shouldn't be disregarded. But High Fidelity is the best movie ever made about a breakup, right? I mean, it is the definitive breakup movie
for
guys.
Oh, by far, yes.
Lovely, lovely performances by everybody involved, writing, direction. I mean, one of my favorites. I could watch this movie once a year. I should watch it more often, actually. All right, next we have Meet the Parents versus Analyze This, both Robert De Niro comedies, both smash hits.
What do you think?
I say Analyze This.
Really? I did not like Analyze This at all.
I just rewatched it last week. I still find it funny as shit. I really do find it funny. Although Meet the Parents, the original, was good. It was the only good one, right? Can we agree on that?
That is true, but I do like the second one. I do like Meet the Fockers.
They get so forced.
I don't think it's that forced. Well, the third one is.
The third one's disastrous.
It's just not very good.
The only thing about the third one that's even watchable is Jessica Alba running around.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's really the saving grace. That's all I recall about the third one.
A very good movie.
It's like, oh yeah, Jessica Alba is running around in that movie. All right, last but not least, we have the match off between 16 Blocks and Red, both Bruce Willis films. Which one did you go with?
They're both good. I picked Red. I really liked the action and just the crazy zaniness of Red. I think that's probably due to it coming off of being a comic book, maybe. I don't know.
Red was a nice surprise.
A little more fun than 16 Blocks, I thought. But 16 Blocks is great.
16 Blocks I prefer because of the fact, I love the whole real-time aspect of it. It's shot in, you know, 118 minutes. The whole story takes place in 118 minutes. They have to go 16 blocks in 118 minutes. Great setup. Fantastic direction by Richard Donner. You and I talked about possibly doing this as a retro in the future. I think maybe we will. But I do like Red as well. I think Red is better than Red 2 as well. Let's get that straight. But Red is fun and probably the last good Bruce Willis movie. You say that? I can't think of one he's done since that I actually liked.
I don't remember what year it came out.
2010, I want to say.
Red came out in 2010? No.
Yeah. The second one came out in like 2013. Yeah, man. Well, it's old now. That movie's old. It's
like TNT. I thought it was older than that.
Red? No, yeah. 2010, I'm willing to say. Let me look at it right now.
Wow, that's pretty. Yeah, you're right. 2010. That is not as old as I thought.
16 Blocks is 2006 or 2005.
Yeah, I know that one's old. For some reason, I thought Red was 2008. Something, I mean, okay, 2 years.
Well, that was
fine,
like surrogate.
I'm just
time
saying.
Period.
Yeah, that is true. Well, it's Bruce Willis. It could be, you know, 8 movies in a year for all I know.
That's the Nicolas Cage scenario right now. Let's move on to our reviews here. I want to know what's going on with Beauty and the Beast. Like I said, I was told it was just okay. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I have to agree. I was amazed. I scoffed a little bit at that last time we talked about it, but it's true. It's just okay. It's really not very good. It's a movie. It exists. It's really like watching a stage play of the cartoon, you know, and things don't translate very well. The animation, especially in the facial animation, is so clear in the movie or in the cartoon, and it just doesn't translate into this movie at all. So you kind of miss a lot.
I like the cartoon, but I didn't love it as a kid. I don't like hold it in such reverence that I recall everything. Do you have that strong of a memory of
it? Yeah, I really liked it. I mean, the music is so good. And the music here, it's the same music, so it's still good. And you leave the theater humming it and all that, but it's not as good as the other one. You know, it's just not, they're just not as good as singers.
But you didn't period. Like The Jungle Book. Have you liked any of these Disney transitional movies, you know, these live-action adaptions?
Not really. I think the animation ones are better, and I still say that is true of The Jungle Book, but I will say that at least having seen this, I can look back and see that The Jungle Book is better.
Okay.
So I can say okay. The Jungle. So to me, The Jungle Book, you know, fails moderately for not translating everything over that was so good in the animated one. And again, I think music would be my number one complaint with Jungle Book, is that the music just isn't as good. Same thing I would say to this, but this fails a little worse in a lot of areas. One being the opening of this movie doesn't have that fairy tale aspect to it. You don't get the beginning tale of how he becomes the beast is all live action. This movie so desperately wants you to accept it as live action that it tries a little bit too hard, and it comes off as a lot less magical than the animated movie.
So it's just okay. So you're giving it 2 stars, basically. Yeah. Not a recommendation or a minor recommendation.
No, I would say wait. I would not go to the theater to see this.
It will... You're the only one, because everybody is going. This is doing astronomical
numbers.
Well,
no, I did go.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
But I don't know. Disney has this thing, right, where they like Star Wars movies, right? I've been to those Star Wars movies. I've not liked them, but I've still been, and I will probably still go again.
Yeah, it's a strange mind control they have.
At what point can they lose, right? I don't know. At some point. They haven't lost me yet, and I'm... not saying good things, so I don't know.
You're watching Peach Dragon, motherfucker. You're going to tell me they got you full grip.
That was on Netflix.
Regardless, that you're a part of their metric system.
I'll be watching BFG next month as well. So.
Exactly. You're falling asleep to Alice in Wonderland. All right. Well, I got a chance to catch up with Nerve this last week, and this was something you saw last year. You recommended on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Minor hit during the summer. I can absolutely understand why. I actually really like this little thriller.
Yeah.
Smart little movie for what it was. And I thought, first of all, I like Emma Roberts. I do. I like her as a screen presence. And I like Franco.
She's a good actress. Yeah, and they're good together in this.
The first time I've actually thought he wasn't cloying and annoying. He annoys me in those Now You See Me movies and in Unfinished Business and other things I've seen him in. In this, he did not bother me at all. I like the idea of this. I like the setup of this. It was smart in the way that it introduced who she was. The first 5 minutes of this is a shitload of information that this movie throws at you without any exposition. honestly, I mean, there's a lot of information that's given to you visually and in a very interesting way that caught my attention and kept me going for the ride. Is it flawless? No. But it's better than things like Pulse in the comparative,
it is what it is, right? I mean, this is a movie that you will likely not be seeing in theaters maybe in the near future, right? I mean, if theaters go the way that they're going, then these are the movies that are going to be first to go, right?
Yeah, these would be pushed out. These are just straight Netflix. This looks like it could have premiered to Netflix, but I'm glad it does still go into a theater. But it will also play on TBS or TNT for the next 2 decades. That kind of movie.
Yeah, it's a cheap movie, but it is very effective, and I agree. It's one of those. I actually did anyone direct this that matters?
of note. I cannot recall. I can't remember either.
But this would be a really good movie for like someone, or it used to be these types of movies. You would see these and you'd be able to say, oh, this guy is going to be something. And I would actually say whoever it is, I don't know if they already are someone, but I would bet that, you know, give them a bigger movie because they really did a good job on this.
Yeah, for gimmicky thrillers, I like this, and especially because it was a quote-unquote teen movie. You know, it's the kind of movie that a 13-year-old can watch and think is really cool. You know, and you wouldn't be embarrassed to watch it with them and say, yeah, it was a good movie. So I liked it. It was good enough for what it was. It wasn't a world beater, but, you know, it's an interesting little 90 minutes. So what's up with Hardcore Henry? Another, you know, kind of gimmicky movie. This is the first-person
First-person thing. I watched the zombie one of the first person thing not too long ago. I gave that review. So I finally caught up with Hardcore Henry, and I gotta be honest, this thing is just fucking terrible.
Is it worse than Crank? Cause that's what this reminded me of. Remember Crank?
The hell yeah. This is worse than Crank. This is way less of a movie than Crank. They're just running around. It's just a nonsense. This would be way better as a YouTube short video, you know, because the scene that you're waiting for is this in battle scene between the guy and this evil boss guy who's like Magneto, I guess. They say he's telekinetic, whatever, you know, but he more or less moves like Metallica objects from what I could see. So I'm not sure. I think he's more like a Magneto guy.
There's a fucking sci-fi angle to this piece of shit movie.
Oh, yeah. Well, the whole thing's... Well, yeah, you've seen the trailer. I mean, stuff's actually in the trailer with that guy, the bad guy who moves stuff with his mind. But he's woken up, and they put a fake arm on him and a robotic leg and shit. And there's a whole thing to it. There's this whole backstory bullshit thing that's really boring. And
yeah, man, I couldn't have gotten... I barely got through the trailer. Honestly, this whole first-person shit...
It's kind of like an Aeon Flux story, you know, where they try too hard, you know, and you're like, oh my God, this is too much. But there is a scene, like if you ever do wind up watching this, just skip ahead to the final battle, and it's fucking awesome.
I'm sure, but that's the scene.
I mean, good Lord, is it awesome. Yeah, just beautiful, just stunt after stunt, and the whole first person thing works fucking perfectly in this whole sequence. You're just like, yes, this is awesome. And then it's not the ending scene, though. They have to tell you, go through the whole story and tell you like the twists and everything, and you're like, fuck, why didn't it just end?
Right on a high note, sir.
Yeah, so that's what it's not worth watching. If you do watch it, it is worth watching that scene, which I think is an incredible piece of work, really. But the movie as a whole just sucks, the big one.
Yeah, that's why it tanked. I mean, these kind of gimmicky thrillers are always going to come out and reinvent the format and change the way we see movies.
I can't remember what it's called, but they had that zombie one. That was on Netflix. I watched it. And it was
Spectra.
It wasn't that. That was a good one too. But yeah, it was something else. And it gave me hope that this would be better, you know, because this seemed Hardcore Henry seemed to have more behind it than that one. And that one wasn't bad. It wasn't terrible. You know, it was watchable. This, however, is just unwatchable. Like you'll fall asleep before, if you don't fast forward to that, to the good scene at the end, you'll fall asleep before then and miss it.
Yeah, I'll probably never see this movie, honestly. This had no interest for me. These kind of stunt movies, I don't mean stunt as in like literal stunt, but kind of gimmicky stunts.
Sure.
Just don't do it for me. They really don't. Even Crank was a bore to me because it was such a – and I'm the person that just said 16 blocks I like because it had the gimmick of 118 minutes and 16 blocks. But that to me is a narrative gimmick. You know, this is just a visual gimmick, and it just doesn't work. So.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Well, speaking of catching up, because I've been doing a lot of that, and I'm the one speaking about it. So I got a chance to see a movie that you were just so on. And I got to tell you, man, I watched Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates, and I fucking loved this movie. I thought it was the best comedy of last year.
I don't know that I was so on it, but I would say I was a little bit more than so on it. But yeah, I wasn't.
You gave it a moderate recommendation.
I wasn't over the moon with this, as it sounds you are.
I really thought, I don't know, maybe because I had been told that it was just okay by a couple people and had
well, as compared though to everything else
that came out last year.
Yeah, right. That's what I was saying about it too. It really puts this up. It almost like moves it up to another level. Just
it's the
just
best
in
comedy
comparison.
Of last year.
Yeah, which
honestly,
is really sad though.
I would put this and then Popstar and then Keanu in that and really spots 2 and 3 are.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It was the only comedy of last year that felt like a real comedy.
Do you know why I liked it too? Because it first of all, it did the raunch thing right. It played with just enough raunch where it was still funny. The girls were allowed to play by the same rules as the guys, and it still had a level of sweetness that wasn't overly sentimental and let's stop the movie now for this kind of message moment that hampered Neighbors 2, hampered Dirty Grandpa, and whatever thing Zac Efron was in most comedies from last year, including Central Intelligence. You know, it missed that moment, and it really, this could have been a Wedding Crashers sequel. I mean, I'm watching this going, man, this could have easily been at one point a Wedding Crashers 2, where they go to another wedding and they need to, you know, their girls have been dumped and they need to bring dates. But I'm glad that they had Adam Devine and Zac Efron, who play very well off each other, and Kendrick, and I can't recall that girl's name, dark hair girl, but she's funnier than shit too. Just really a nice, pleasant surprise and funny all the way through, which most comedies aren't. They're usually funny for about 40 minutes, maybe an hour, and then, you know, dead spots in there. But this I thought was really damn good. Maybe my favorite comedy in a long time.
Cool. Well, then I'm glad you watched it.
Yeah, all right. Off then.
Awesome, man.
All right, bro.
I liked it too. It was good, yeah.
Tell me about Kate Beckinsale's ass. I mean, tell me about Underworld.
I will tell you that Kate Beckinsale looks the best that she's ever looked ever in her whole life.
I think she's a vampire. She's not aging.
And I don't get it. Oh, no, they're aging. These women are all aging, and they're aging. I don't know. How do you explain it? They're aging better. I don't know. I have no idea.
She's a stunning creature.
Yeah, she looks great in this. She's perfect for action movies, really, at this point, because she has the body that's muscular enough to look like she's a vampire that could do some stuff, but you know, she's not She-Hulk, so she's still hot. I don't know. Is that a terrible thing to say?
I mean,
maybe. But you know what I mean.
This movie? Is this the worst of all of them?
No. Well, the third one's the worst, but
it is.
It's really
the only one I've seen all the way through, so I can tell you. I can't get through these movies. I don't know what it is.
This is just an extension. Yeah, this is just a back to the well type thing where, you know, for the fans, you know, it's like the Veronica Mars movie, really. There's no point to it other than just to have an Underworld movie. You know, yeah, you like Underworld? Here's some more. And so you sit down and you watch it, and you're like, yeah, this is Underworld. It's pretty fucking boring. Werewolves fighting vampires. Okay, I got it. There's a couple of good action sequences in it. You're like, okay, cool. And then it goes back into the story, and you're like, fuck, all right, I got it. Vampires versus fucking werewolves. You know, and that's the whole deal.
I know you like this franchise a lot, and I swear to you, I've tried to watch the first one, which you say is the best one. I like Len Wiseman.
The second one is the best one.
I can't get to it because I can't get through the fucking first one.
The first one is good, but it is slower. I do like the first one, but it's slow. But it has a good story. I don't know. It works for me. And then the second one is the bat out of hell one. It's the one that the story's done. We got it. Boom, action, action, action. Shit's going down. You know, we're out to do this. We're going here. We're going there. We're doing that. And I love that one. I love the second one. But these other ones, the third one's fucking stupid. It's just a
prequel, yeah.
Prequel thing, the story we already know. But this fourth and this fifth one here are just, they just exist, you know? And I can't say that the stories are compelling in any way. I just don't care. And they've cut out the whole, the entire story from the first and the second one is over, you know?
Well, it sounds like this could be your review for Resident Evil, the final chapter, the latest in that trilogy or that series. Is that the case, or is this that better?
This is a little bit better. And I think because they knew this was the final chapter, and so they go back to the Hive. You know, it folds back over onto itself and into the first one, which keeps it interesting. But it's still the same old stupid-ass Resident Evil, right? The movie opens, and fucking Alice is of course walking around this desolate, like, fucking world, zombie world, trying to survive. And it's like, how the fuck does she always wind up there? Like, how is this the beginning of all these movies?
Well, it's like a video game. You just turn it on and she's in a haunted house.
But something fucking happened in the last movie, right? Something happened in the movie before that. How the fuck do these people, and I guess the Underworld movies are the same fucking way. Well, not really. The fourth one was actually very different, but it's like what?
How is it the fifth or sixth?
Oh, this has to be the sixth one.
I think I've seen three of these, and honestly, the first one is the only one that I gave a shit about. That was the good one, as far as I was
concerned. First one is the good one. I really like the third one a lot. I
never saw that one. The second one was so ratchet, I could barely get through it.
Just
you and I saw that in a theater.
They are just, yeah. Those are Screen Gems movies. What do you want?
They exist to fill auditoriums in January.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this movie does what it's totally meant to do. It kept my attention when it needed to. You know, it did. It does what it does. There's really nothing amazing about it. But
you're putting it on a tier above The Underworld?
I would, because it was a little bit more interesting. At least wraps it up. Well, it doesn't even wrap it up. You know, it leaves it open. It wraps it up without wrapping it up. So that's enough for you. The last time it was called the final chapter,
they made about 9 movies after that. And that was the Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
I believe it is what it is.
I just, you know, it's great to see Ali Larter in something, because I don't know where she would be without these Resident Evil movies.
I miss her, and I miss Amy Smart.
Yeah, her friend, Amy Smart. I don't know what happened to her either.
Both of them are very pleasant actresses.
I've been gone. Yeah, Amy Smart's great.
Ali
Larter's good, too. I mean, Ali Larter, you know, she was in Entourage until they realized they could get Jessica Alba.
Yeah, right. I got to admit, good trade. Okay, I saw The Trust, to continue my Nicolas Cage oddity of watching his films long past anyone else watching. And this was strange, because last week I talked about Dog Eat Dog, the Paul Schrader, William Dafoe, Nicolas Cage movie, and I gave that a recommendation with a warning. And I really thought The Trust was going to be the gem of the two, and The Trust is actually the one that makes no sense. That is a fucking mess of a movie that has two actors on such wildly different pages in Elijah Wood and Nicolas Cage that they don't even seem like they're interplaying with one another.
Did you watch this on?
I watched it on streaming. It's on Netflix right now.
It's on Netflix. That's what I thought.
So I read the reviews from the nation's critics, and a lot of them gave it very positive reviews, including Richard Roper, who extremely enjoyed the chemistry between the two. I thought it was glib and. It was almost like if Wes Anderson had decided to do this Vegas heist movie. It's overly.
Is that weird? Do you mean like it's weird like that? Like it's kooky?
It's eccentric for no reason, but not in the Paul Schrader. I mean, that movie's obviously eccentric too, but that had a weight to it that this movie doesn't have. So it's asking you the whole time to give a shit about this heist that they're going on and the violence of the two men, but it's interspersed with this kind of odd humor. That doesn't work at all, and two actors playing different notes. It's a mess, man. It looks great. I mean, it's shot very well, and I like the fact that they're in the Peppermill, which if you've ever been to Las Vegas, you know that that's the Peppermill in Reno, and it's nowhere near. I mean, I've been sitting at the Bar of the Rat, and I'm like, oh, that's Reno, and there's no such thing as the Las Vegas PD. It's Las Vegas Metropolitan. There's no LVPD.
Mm-hmm. That's
anybody
a movie.
That's ever been arrested in Vegas?
It's a movie.
I know it's a movie, but Christ, it's not. I mean, it could have been a Steven Seagal movie at this point.
So you're saying
disappointing?
Disappointing. And he's done a lot of. He's been a sidekick a lot recently.
Who's that? Cage?
No.
Wood.
Yeah,
Elijah Wood's like pretty much Elijah retired. Wood.
Is he? I mean, I liked him in Last Witch Hunter.
Yeah, I liked him in that. I forgot he was.
But he was a sidekick again. Well, I mean, kind of. But he was a sidekick again, right? He seems to be playing the roles that would go up to like Shia LaBeouf.
Well, thank God he's gone, huh? Right? Maybe they can get Wood to do the next Indiana Jones movie or Transformers.
I don't know. I think he should be Tom Cruise's sidekick from now on, because they're about the same. Like the height wise, it would work.
In the next Top Gun, he's the new Goose.
Yeah, it would work.
Swan.
Cruise wouldn't have to wear lifts or anything. He'd be taller.
Speaking of 80s movies, you know, I got a chance yesterday to check out The Karate Kid on one of those retro screenings. And I just want to talk briefly about how awesome this movie is. You're a fan of this, right? The first one?
I think that everyone is a fan of this movie. I would be... Are there people that don't like Karate Kid?
If they are, there's no use talking to them. I mean, there's no hope for them. Because this movie is a fucking classic. And you watch this on a big screen. I had told you this off air that there's a visual simplicity to this that is so interesting and makes these movies larger than life. You watch an 80s movie on the big screen and these things fucking roar. I've never seen The Karate Kid on a big screen. I have only seen it on home video and HBO and all these things. And one of my favorite movies, I've seen it almost 100 times, I would imagine, in my life. But on a big screen with, I mean, the sound and the Bill Conti score and even just the clarity of the little things that Mr. Miyagi was saying, it's perfectly timed humor and just a great movie. And the John G. Avildsen trick of ending on the high note, the freeze frame, you know, the improving freeze frame, that shit, it made my eyes well up. I'm not afraid to tell you right now that I got goosebumps and I had to hide the fact that my eyes were welling up. I had to wipe them shits real quick, man, because I love movies that end on a character, like the highest point of that character's life at that, you know what I mean? Like that moment of, it's just a great 80s tradition. And I mean, that last moment, you know, the finish him, then you know, the music swelling and the crate, it just all, I love it. Absolutely works 100%. And I had to go to that one because it's these retros. I love the fact that they're doing more, you know, movies that should be, not just Singing in the Rain, Gone with the Wind, things, you know, things that maybe a generation that hasn't gotten a chance to see these things on the big screen deserve.
I can't wait for Terminator 2. I'm saying for the same reasons, though, because I haven't seen, I mean, seeing Top Gun and then going to Terminator 2, because Terminator 2 would be quite possibly the best lineup to something to a big blockbuster that came out this year, right? Something modern. It would be the closest that we could get. So I'm really interested to see on a big screen how that plays, having seen all these others.
I can tell you from experience, I've seen a lot of these retros. I mean, I've seen just in the last year, I saw Big Trouble, Blade Runner, Raiders, that typically these things on a big screen run past the parts that you would consider slow on home video when you were a kid. Or it's odd how that works on it.
I agree. And that works reverse as well. You know, I've seen many movies in theaters that I was like, eh, and then you watch them at home and they work. So
yeah,
I agree with you. So that's another interesting thing that I want to see about this too, because on home video, Terminator 2 is fucking dense and long.
Yeah. And on the big screen, I remember being the opposite. But that was, you know, the Virgin.
And this isn't like a retro thing either. This T3 is like the Top Gun thing, you know, it's remastered and stuff. So
they're doing to this what basically I think that Lucas did with those 1997 Star Wars re-releases when they were using that to fund further projects. I think he's actually re-releasing this to fund the Avatar sequels and all that kind of stuff, which is a great idea.
I think he needs to fund the Avatar sequels. No, he's got the money. Really?
Or the Terminator stuff. Yeah, it was like to fund future projects. It was to go back to Lightstorm and all that kind of stuff. Remember Lightstorm? Remember that logo? Remember that fucking logo? I used to love that logo. And once again, can we get it to fund the fact? I mean, I'll take a True Lies.
Is that why he had to push Avatar back? They ran out of money?
I know, right? I mean, by the time they get the Avatar sequel out, it'll be a decade since the first one.
Oh, Jesus.
Then you start wondering if
it'll
need it.
It'll have cost him $1 billion to make it.
You're going to go back and rewatch that first one, sir. I want you to change your opinion on that.
I am. I bought it on Vudu because I've been wanting to see it. It's been possible to find for free, so I broke down. I got it. I only paid $2 for it, but I still paid for it.
You son of a bitch.
I still paid for it, so I got it. So I am prepared this week to watch that at some point. And hopefully, I've only seen it. I can't remember if I've ever seen it on home video. I believe I've only seen it in the theater.
Oh, man. I saw it multiple times in theater. Loved it then and on home video. Still is great. I mean, you got one of those nice big TVs at play. It's a gorgeous movie. It really is. I love that movie. I think you got your ticker checked there, bud, when you watch that thing. Although, you know, you changed my mind on Pain and Gain over the years. So I hope that Avatar is changed in your mind. Hey, let's take a quick break and we'll come back with our streaming online pick and Trailer Addict.
This podcast is a proud member of the LAMB Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
All right, Kristen, I am so excited that you've decided to do a podcast with me, but what are we going to do a podcast about? There's so many other movie podcasts. We got to do something original.
Well, you know, I'm a big fan of Disney movies. What about something like that?
That's just kid stuff. What do we want to do that for?
Did you know that The Avengers is a Disney movie? Or that Pulp Fiction is a Disney movie?
Pulp Fiction is not a Disney movie.
It's technically owned by Miramax, which is part of Disney.
We are still going to talk about the Disney animated movies, though, right?
I thought you said that was kid stuff.
Well, you know, I've got two kids. I got to be a good dad and stuff.
So be sure to subscribe to the Walt Sent Me podcast, where we discuss the various subsidiaries of the Walt Disney Studios, including the animated movies.
It's available on iTunes, Podomatic, and wherever you find great podcasts. And I swear, it's not kid stuff.
I don't know that I understand that, but okay.
Jesus, I thought that was a podcast in itself.
How, if it's called Walt Sent Me, how is it not about kid stuff? Walt Disney, the man, was about, you know, the kid stuff. He will, I guess it was,
he was
for
also
adults
about
too,
racism and a lot of shit.
But he didn't.
Man.
He was, well, he was. That he was the point of the time. That wasn't really. I don't know that he was so much about that.
Uncle Walt was a strange man. I know people love
but
Walt.
I
have a friend
you,
that goes to Walt Disney every year.
Well, he has
the
nothing
second
to do with Miramax. He has nothing to do with Marvel. I don't. What the fuck's
Touchstone?
Have to do with Walt? Yeah. Give me a break.
We're spending way too much time on this. Let's move on. Let's move on. Streaming online pick. You got one? You got anything you want to shout out there?
Nah. Watch the Dave Chappelle Netflix special.
Great.
Those are good.
Two of them.
Very funny. Yeah, they got the two-parter.
Which is a very, you know, basically 2 hours of comedy. And I was telling you off air, I thought the second part, the Austin, Texas special, was moderately funnier because they both were hilarious. But I thought the second half was really good. I miss Chappelle. You know, I watched a lot of comedy this weekend, and I watched some other comedians, Amy Schumer special on there, and a couple other ones after that. And you just realize how much better he is. You know, how much his delivery and how slick and the setting up and a certain expectation and then reversing it. You know, the whole method of joke telling and pushing buttons and how you said how un-PC he was and goddamn he really is.
Yeah, I love it. I mean,
there.
Good God, it's about time. I'm so tired of
what's it? It's the last safe.
But it's not bad. Like not.
It's not hurtful. It's fucking comedy.
Yeah, it's not like he's not being politically correct, just to not be politically correct. Like he's doing it for a point, you know, and it works.
It was really good specials on there, so I agree with you on that. My streaming online pick is also on Netflix. It's Mystery Science Theater 3000. They're putting all the original episodes on there, starting from 1988, if you can believe it.
Getting ready for the new one.
Getting ready for the new ones that they've acquired. And
which
some of these are a rough run. I mean, honestly, at an hour and 20 minutes, maybe 30 minutes would have done.
Some of those are unwatchable and not funny at all.
Some of them are absolute gold mines when you've had a little bit of the wacky tobacco in the middle.
If they
of
have
night, you know?
The laser blast one on there, that one's fucking hysterical.
I mean, even the movie. Remember the Mystery Science Theater 3000? I mean, there was one scene in the movie where the guy goes, "Leave now," and he goes, "Acting."
Yeah.
You know, even when I think Gene Siskel points it out in the beginning when the old logo says Universal International, and the guy goes, "Well, if it's Universal, wouldn't it be International?" It's like it's very quick, off-the-cuff stuff. You know, I love that shit. But yeah, acquired taste. But it really reminds me of the early days of Comedy Central. I'm sure you were one of the first watchers of that. Well, back when we had basically Talk Soup, The A-List, and Mystery Science Theater 3000 only, replaying and repeat. Ah, the early days.
Yeah, it's interesting to see a channel just start off.
Yeah, remember when Fox was like brand new and all the crazy shit they were doing?
Nothing. Well, then there's hardly anything on them, you know?
Yeah, especially back then. That was like
back then we had a lot of reruns and stuff, especially for things on cable. They went and only did so many episodes of things, so you got a lot of reruns.
All right, yeah, so both those are available on the Netflix service. Let's do Trailer Addicts.
Trailers can be wondrous things, giving us insight into the unseen movies of the future. But when they're bad, fire photon torpedoes. Shields up, red alert. Prepare for Trailer Addict.
Okay. I think we're prepared.
All right.
My shields are up.
They got a new trailer this week dropped. Definitely a huge improvement over the teaser trailer that was released some months ago.
Yeah.
Big question, though, where is Superman and why is he missing from the trailer? I didn't think his absence was all that concerning.
Well, we know why. Yeah.
Of course we know why. But did you like the trailer? Where do you stand? I think it's.
I really loved the trailer. I thought, wow, this looks really good. I thought everything in it works. I thought it looks fun. And it's interesting to see the other side of that reaction on the internet, where people think that this looks like the same old DC stuff and that it looks too gritty and too much CGI. But I mean, too much CGI? Is that even a I don't even know if I can have that as a valid complaint anymore.
We were talking about the Karate Kid's visual simplicity, and you were telling me that you think that today's movies are visual overkill, and I agree with you 100%. Mm-hmm. My eyes literally get tired.
But you can't complain about it because it's every movie.
Yeah,
so you can't be like, oh, Justice League's no good. There's too much CGI. It's like, oh, but the Marvel movies are good? Hello? Right.
I think this is 100% a step in the right direction of where they need to be going, which I think that they're slowly but surely finding their footing, although the
secondary characters look fantastic, right? Aquaman looks great in this.
Aquaman looks great. I'm still not sold on the Flash.
Really? I think
like
he looks really good in this.
I'm not the biggest fan of him as Barry Allen. Mm-hmm. And Wonder Woman, I'm going to reserve until I see that film.
I still think that looks great. So I think she looks good in that role. I think that they may actually have something that finally, you know, I'm reluctant to say hit it out of the park, but at least, you know, I don't know, it's a double or something.
I thought a double was, I thought a single was Batman versus Superman. I didn't hate it, but I thought it was pretty much a single. And I thought a double was Suicide Squad.
It.
So I wish that they could get their shit together and I could be excited like I used to be when I'd see a Batman trailer. Because that's basically what I'm watching here is Batman, you know, gathering up all his pals. And I make sense that he's going and collecting these people and where they left it. What I keep trying to do is make sense of Batman versus Superman and tell myself that, okay, there's something in here. There's a nugget of something, but there really isn't.
There's been nothing in these DC movies for a while.
I know. Even Suicide Squad. I'm going to go back and rewatch this, and I start it, and I go, why am I doing this?
I still don't care. No one's going to beat that out of me, but I cannot defend it, so...
I know.
I totally understand what you're saying.
No intellectual defense you can make. And I put Batman and Superman on to fall asleep, to be honest with you, because it is a sleeping aid. Okay, yeah. Let's move on and talk about All Eyes on Me, the Tupac Shakur life story, a musical biopic that I will be seeing, unlike Walk the Line and Ray, especially coming off the extremely well-received and I thought excellent Straight Outta Compton a few years back. That's really the impetus of why this got made. I thought Notorious in 2009 with the Biggie Small story was one of the best films of that year. A really overlooked movie everybody should watch, but really centered on the focus of him and his mom more than anything. But this looks like a really good, it looks good. This trailer looks fantastic. What do you think?
I don't know. It looks like more of the same to me. I'm not even sure. At the end of this trailer, they say, basically allude that, you know, Tupac saying this is the real story. And I just don't think that this is the real story. To me, this looks like a glorification of Tupac in a way that, I don't know. Is this even about Tupac, or could this just be interchangeable with any, random rapper person at this point? It didn't feel legit to me. I don't know. Maybe the movie's different.
I would say it felt very authentic. The casting, the look, everything about it looked very authentic.
They got a guy that looks like it, but, you know, change it to someone else. Make it not a Tupac movie. Would this be surprising or different in any way that you would expect it to be? You know, I mean, is this the true story? I felt like it's not, you know. It's too heavy-handed. It's too overwhelming. He's basically like a superhero in this movie.
Oh, he's a messiah of some sort.
Yeah, it's I don't know.
I will say that the definitive Tupac piece of visual media would be that Tupac Resurrection documentary from 2003, 2004, somewhere in there. That really was done all in his own words. I think MTV Films did it. Absolutely great, great documentary. And that will say it all. It should say it all. Mm-hmm. I mean, the movie is obviously somebody took this out of the bottom drawer when Straight Outta Compton passed $170 million at the box office. And they said, okay, what else can we... what other story can we tell kind of in this cipher? And you say superheroes, you're not far off. This is kind of that hip-hop universe, you know,
just,
if you will.
I mean, maybe that's the trailer. right? Maybe that's not the movie. Maybe it's the trailer just to sell tickets and everything, and it gets you, you know, whipped up into a kind of an emotional frenzy, which it does a good job of that, but I don't know. There's just that in the back of my mind watching this, I just felt like this is not, this doesn't seem real to me. Like, it's too much, you know, like shit's not real. Like, looking back on things, everyone wants to build these true stories, and they want to have these seminal moments where people are like, you know, do these amazing things, but you know damn well they didn't. It was just some shit. They were just sitting around. That's why I kind of like Compton so much, because it felt so much real. Like, they really were just kind of sitting around. They really did just kind of stumble into things. And that to me, felt real.
Well, Compton is a great piece of filmmaking. I mean, not every biopic can be that. So who knows? And this was supposed to be a John Singleton film. He tried very hard for a lot of years to get that off the ground, and he couldn't. And I believe this is Reggie Blythe, or came back... I cannot think of his name. I'm sorry. I'm fucking up. I can't think of the director's name.
You should be sorry. That's
terrible. Oh, my God. I know. How terrible it's all right. of me. Will you forgive me? Know. Thank you.
What Singleton. Audience. Singleton will forgive you.
Singleton right now, believe me, could care less. He's not too worried about it. Oh, Benny Boone, the music video director. Thank you. Came to me. And all right, let's move on. Let's talk about the next trailer. Baywatch released its Red Band trailer this week. A little bit funnier, I think, than the I've seen mm-hmm. all the original Baywatch episodes, because, like I was telling you earlier,
and know them by heart.
USA was basically the Skinamax basic cable, you know, when
and
you
it,
were a kid.
It was the Baywatch channel for a long time.
It was, and Baywatch was the most watched show in the world for years. I mean, that's a crazy thing to say, but it was the most popular show in the fucking world, which is why this property's even in existence. And to watch this trailer, I realized, okay, so they're using the Matt Brody name and the Mitch Buchanan name of real characters in the show, and they're vaguely resembling the kind of relationship between the two. Not really. And the best part about that is, he's, you know, Zac Efron at one point says, you know, I think that we should get the real cops. We are not qualified to do this. And I thought this trailer started charming me a little bit. I really liked it. I wanted to see more of it. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you. This is the first trailer of Baywatch that I saw where I thought, oh, there's this whole other movie to this. They're not just ridiculous action stars, although they are, but at least it builds to it. And it kind of plays them off as... it feels more Baywatchy, to be honest, this trailer does than any of the other trailers. And it feels a little bit cheesy, you know, like it's 3 p.m. and I'm watching Baywatch a little bit and things get a little out of hand and they gotta save the day, you know, because they were those episodes.
This looks like perfect summertime counter programming to all the big blockbusters that are going to be out around it, you know, that surround its release date. And it looks like another surefire hit. And I was watching this trailer, I just thought, you know, as Schwarzenegger segued into comedy and had hits with Twins and mm-hmm. Kindergarten Cop and things like that, it wasn't this effortless. I mean, The Rock is making it extremely effortless.
The Rock is so lovable on screen that he's so smooth, like, in that sense, that to go into action comedies is like a perfect fit.
It literally is like the saying, you know, it's like Shaft, where it's like, all the guys want to be him, all the chicks want him. You know what I mean? It's like Dwayne Johnson. You can't be mad at the guy. I mean, everybody likes the guy.
I mean, the only real thing that's up in the air is, will it be as big as Chips?
We'll see where the chips may fall. Now, let's talk about Goon 2. This is the lowbrow sequel Goonier. To the low budget. Goonier 2. To Goon, the Sean William Scott film from a few years back, directed by Jay Baruchel and also starring Ray Donovan star Liev Schreiber. What do you think? This trailer to me looked like a pale imitation.
I thought the trailer was fucking terrible.
Yeah, really badly cut.
I hope there's a better movie in here somewhere, but otherwise this doesn't really appear to be much of a movie. Which the first movie is fantastic, but it's almost more of a character piece. So how does that translate into pushing the world forward and making a sequel? I don't know. They're really, it kind of seems like it's a hard thing to do in general. And so I don't know. Did they fail?
Yeah, this sequel took a long time coming too. And there's really no reason for the sequel other than the fact that the first one did well on a, you know, on mm-hmm. the modest level that it was supposed to be released at. And the first one is good. I suggest you watch it. It's got a nice relationship scene between Scott and Schreiber there, where they talk about their careers and their lives mm-hmm. at different spectrums. That looks like nothing approaching that kind of intelligence or depth is in this, unless this trailer just showed you the most, you know, kind of slapshot-esque antics. This looked like Major League 3 back to training camp,
yeah,
you know?
No, I agree. This really just looked like, what is it? It's about a hockey team, right? And there's hockey, and they play hockey. And that's
they're rowdy and rambunctious.
Fucking it, you know? Yeah. And it's like, wait, there's got to be more to this, right? It really just looks like a promo cut together thing, if anything else. It's not meant to be shown, you know, to anyone else other than like press or something.
I thought Stephen Baldwin was going to come out of somewhere and act fucking an ass himself. I don't know.
That would have made it much more worthwhile.
Let's talk about Rough Night, which is the Bachelorette Gone Wrong comedy starring Scarlett Johansson, Kate McKenna. And this looked extremely similar to Girls Trip, which we talked about on the last mm-hmm. show, except this is four white actresses. And then all of a sudden,
Zoe Kravitz
into,
is in it.
Yeah, which is freaking me out, man, because I really, she's fucking gorgeous. When did Zoe Kravitz get so hot?
For a little while now, yeah.
How old is she? I feel disgusted.
She's got to be, well, I mean, as compared to you.
hey, that's fucking crazy, sir.
I don't know. She's only, I mean, she's only like a decade younger than us, so it's all, oh, okay. so,
well,
so you're good. You're good.
Much younger. Well, we were talking about High Fidelity earlier in the show, and that's got Lisa Bonet, who is gorgeous,
right.
And Zoe Kravitz, Lenny Kravitz, you know, it gets a lot of fan base there. So they made a very, very beautiful human being there, and that's all I kept thinking about in this trailer. She's fucking stunning, but
yeah.
This all of a sudden goes from girls' party thing into Very Bad Things, you know, the 1998 film.
I know, right? Didn't this not feel like a very 90s movie to you? It did to me, and I just thought, God, you know, these didn't work in the 90s. What made people think this would work now?
I liked a couple of the individual lines, of course, because of the mm-hmm. talented comedians, but I think this might be dead on
arrival. Right, I mean, Julian Bell, I think, is hysterical.
Especially, when she's doing the coke. She tells me, tell me what to do.
Tell me what to do. Oh! She's like, yeah.
But all the funny jokes in this trailer revolved around coke, is what I realized when it was over. So
that is true.
It reminded me of the Jeremy Piven character in Very Bad Things once again.
Why is Kate McKinnon... I mean, what's with the Australian accent? Is that just because she can? Just to prove? I don't know. What are we doing?
Yeah.
Why is she Australian?
I thought that when I saw that it was from the writers of Broad City, which is a show that I watch occasionally and get a good laugh out of, even on a rare occasion, that it was from the writers of them, I thought, oh, this is going to be a lot different than this trailer showing. And sure shit, then the guy dies. And I thought, yep, there's that kind of that offbeat writing they have, you know. And this looks mainstream and it'll probably attract a lot of people opening weekend. But
so
I guarantee you this is darker than it lays on.
This is even different than it is here. Yeah, because it appears to be pretty straightforward. So you
think
this gets
a lot darker.
Gets much darker. Yeah, well,
I think this will be
we'll
a big
see.
Surprise to people. This is not going to be the feel-good kind of rom-com, the bad moms type idea here. I don't think so. I mean, it's not Weekend at Bernie's. You can tell that just from the trailer. you know what I mean? Like,
well, I don't know. It could be. They had him in that sex swing all done up. Yeah, it could be Weekend at Bernie's.
Or Boydy. I love Weekend at Bernie's. I just watched that last summer. It was fucking great. I got Weekend at Bernie's 2 right now.
I was just going to say, what about the sequel?
Hey, I got it right here. I'll watch it. Don't threaten me at a good time.
I don't think anyone is.
Yeah, I'm not in danger of
you're misinterpreting the threat. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap up episode 318. We want to thank you guys, as always, for joining us on this podcast. You can catch our old podcast, or I should say our past podcast, over at iTunes, Stitcher, and
I swear you're gonna say podcast.
It's your podcast for us.
Just going on. Yeah,
get your shoe sign back, you little fuck. Yeah, but check us out at moviemavericks.com for the latest podcasts, reviews, all that good stuff. But speaking for Trevor Anderson, I'm Jason Rugard, and we are the Movie Mavericks.
Oh my, another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to moviemavericks.com, warp 9. Engage!